Father, we thank you again for life that we can enjoy this morning. Lord, it's good to be alive. It's good to be able to enjoy what you've given us on this earth. Thank you, Father, that everything is good that you created. There is nothing we should despise, but receive with thankfulness. And yet, Lord, thank you that we don't have to be part of the system of this world, which is a system of envy, of greed, of anger, of bitterness very often. And Father, as we are grateful to you, we don't have to fall into the system of this world, which is so destructive and hurtful. So Father, help us to see the truth and to believe the truth and follow you, so that we may be healed and that we may be a blessing for others as well. Thanks for this hour, in Jesus' name. Amen. So please turn with me to chapter 17. At the end of chapter 16, we read, "It is finished," and it truly is. Chapter 17, 18 is not an ongoing event now, but now John sees something about who is concerned in this whole story. The previous chapters, it was more concerned about how does it come about. Chapter 17, 18 speaks about who is concerned in all these plagues, in all the destruction, what will be finished. And it's the system of the world. And in Revelation 17 is the religious and the political system. And in chapter 18, it seems to be the economical system, the godless religious system, godless political and economical system. And I show you then why we believe there is a difference. Let's just read a few verses, Revelation 17, verse 1. "One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and said to me," remember we just had the seven bowls? "Now one of those angels who poured out the seven bowls for the destruction of the cosmos, the old world, he comes now and says, 'Come, I will show you the punishment of the great prostitute who sits on many waters. With her, the kings of the earth committed adultery, and the inhabitants of the earth were intoxicated with the wine of her adulteries.' Then the angel carried me away in the spirit into a desert. And there I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was covered with blasphemous names and had seven heads and 10 horns. The woman was dressed in purple and scarlet and was glittering with gold, precious stones, and pearls. She held a golden cup in her hand filled with abominable things and the filth of her adulteries. This title was written on her forehead: Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes and of the abominations of the earth. I saw that the woman was drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of those who bore testimony to Jesus." So far. Now, it seems it speaks about Babylon here. Chapter 17 as well as 18 speaks about the mystery Babylon. But there seems to be a difference between 17 and 18. 17 is the mystery Babylon, which seems to be the religious Babylon. And religion has misused people throughout mankind. And religion still misuses and abuses people today. Chapter 18 is called Babylon the Great. And it seems to be a system and a city. Sometimes we use the word of a city to describe a system. For example, when I say Wall Street says, well, Wall Street is a geographical place in New York City, but Wall Street is also a system. Or when we say, Moscow said. Well, that's a geographical place, but Moscow stands for a system as well. So when it says here, Babylon the Great or Mystery Babylon, it's the name for a system. Yes, it can also be a place, but it's more than that. Also, the difference is chapter 17, religious Babylon is destroyed by the beast. Chapter 18 is destroyed, Babylon the Great is destroyed by God. So there are some differences. So we could say chapter 17 is the religious Babylon, chapter 18 is the commercial Babylon or the economical Babylon, okay? Now let's look into some of the details of this religious Babylon. Just read a couple of verses again. John sees in 17 a great prostitute who sits on many waters in verse 1. Now the many waters, go to verse 15 please of the same chapter. And verse 15, the angel said to me, the waters you saw where the prostitute sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and languages. So the religious prostitute sits on many people, in other words, rules worldwide, basically. And religion rules worldwide the people in one or the other way. Not just talking about Christian religion or Muslim religion. Even, you see, even atheism is a religion, by the way. You see, atheists don't like to admit that. But atheism says there is no God. Well, that's a religion. Because it says something about God. Well, it says he is not. But it still says something about God. So also atheism is a religion in that sense. And people get drunk on it just as they get drunk on other religions as well. Because that's what we read here in verse 2. With her, the kings of the earth, that's politics, that's the political systems. The kings of the earth committed adultery, and the inhabitants of the earth were intoxicated with the wine of her adulteries. And what's described here is that the political systems join with the religious systems, and people get drunk on her wine. They are influenced by these systems. And throughout the world history, even today, we see political and religious systems merging, and they then have power over people, nations, languages, and tongues, as we just read here. And then he tries to describe it a little bit. By the way, when it says, Lenin, I think once said, religion is opium for the people. I think it was Lenin. Religion is opium for people, and that is actually true. Because people get drunk. Was it Marx? Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. Could well be. Marx may have said it. But he's right in that sense, because religion is opium for the people. If religion is simply a system to control people. And then John tries to describe this prostitute and this political system joining together. Now go with me to verse 3. The angel carried me away in the spirit into a desert. There I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was covered with blasphemous names and had 7 heads and 10 horns. Now I'm sorry, but I have to draw something again because this is a bit complex now. There is a beast in the desert. And this beast has, what does it have? 7 heads and 10 horns. Now, I don't know how to draw this, but 10 horns. Let's say it has 10 horns on the back. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So these are 10 horns. And then it has 7 heads. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. These are the legs. So you get the idea, okay? Whatever. That's the beast. Okay? And I believe the beast, this stands for the political system, the godless political system. Now, on this beast, what does it say here? The woman sits on it. That's the woman. She sits on it. Yeah, do that. It helps you. The scarlet beast that was covered with blasphemous names. So this beast was covered with blasphemous names. Blasphemy. By the way, what is blasphemy? Anybody describe blasphemy for me? What is it? Cursing God? Yes. Other ideas? What is blasphemy? Dishonoring God? Yes. Make God ridiculous, yes. Make him look stupid, whatever, yes. In German, it's Gotteslästerlich, blasphemous. You know what is very helpful for you? As you study the Bible now, as you do your own devotions, always try to define the words you use. Many words we use in our Christianity, we use them, but we have no clue what they are. But they are so familiar that we think we know what they are. Blasphemy, I believe, what it is it is claiming the glory of God. It is claiming that I can do the things that only God can do. By the way, you know what blasphemy also is? If I believe that with my own good life, I can earn heaven. Because I take the glory of God. I earn heaven because I'm so good. That's also blasphemy. Taking the glory of God. Taking those things that only God can do and only belong to God and taking them for me. Anyways, it has blasphemous names. And you see, when political systems, they are not all cursing God. No. But you know what we do? We say we don't need God. God is redundant. He can stay at home. We can do it ourselves. That's blasphemy as well. Anyways, so this is the beast. Blasphemous names all around it. The woman, verse 4, was dressed in purple and scarlet, so she looked good. Very attractive. Whatever. Purple and scarlet. I don't have another pen. Glittering with gold, precious stones, and pearls. She held a golden cup in her hand. So she had a golden cup in her hand. And what is that? Filled with abominable things and the filth of her adulteries. This title was written on her forehead. So she has something like a headband. And there is a title written on her which says, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes and of the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman was drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of those who bore testimony to Jesus. And when you study church history, you find that also Christian religion has got drunk on the blood of many people. That's religious system. Now, Let's see what else we learn about this woman. Read on from verse 7, please. Verse 6, the end it says, "When I saw her, I was greatly astonished." Well, so would we be. Verse 7, "Then the angel said to me, 'Why are you astonished?'" Good question. "I will explain to you the mystery of the woman and of the beast," she writes, "which has the seven heads and the horns." I'm very grateful he does that. Verse 8, "The beast which you saw once was, now is not, and will come up out of the abyss and go to his destruction." Now, we must now remember, this is not in sequence, who came up out of the abyss? Do we remember that? The dragon, exactly. The dragon came up. The dragon gave the power to whom? To the beast. What did the beast have that made the beast, that made the people follow the beast? Do you remember that? Huh? It had a fatal or a deadly wound, which was healed. What do we read about the beast here? Came out of the abyss. This is the Satan, the dragon, gave the power to the beast. And the beast, it says here, once was, now is not, and yet will come. It once was, it had a fatal or deadly wound, it was not, but then it comes again. That's the same beast as of chapter 13. Okay? In chapter 13, we also defined it as the political system. Now, let's read on. Verse 9. "This calls for a mind with wisdom. The seven heads are seven hills on which the woman sits." These seven heads of those of the beast are seven hills. On which the woman sits. Verse 10, "They are also seven kings." These seven heads also represent seven kings. It also represents seven hills. Okay. Let's read on. Verse 10, "There are also seven kings. Five have fallen. One is. The other has not yet come. But when he does come, he must remain for a little while." Now, what does that mean? Five have fallen. So far, we now try to identify the harlot. She sits in the midst of peoples, multitudes, and nations. She seduces the people of the earth. She gained power with the blood of the saints. She sits on seven hills and makes use of political power. She represents the great city that is yet to come. And then we read, now we come to that still. Where do I have this in here? Now, here we go. What are these seven kings? Five have fallen, one is, and the other one has not yet come. So it's all together seven. Five are past, they are gone. One is, and one is yet to come. And one concept which is reasonably consistent historically as well as biblically is that those, you see, the political system that reigned the world, there are five that have fallen by the times of John. John was living in this time. And those five kingdoms that ruled the then known world was Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Persia, and Greek. These five have fallen, these five political systems. The one is, because when John saw this vision, Rome was the world empire. And since its destruction, Rome lasted for quite a long time. I mean, it was shattered after a while, but it stayed for quite a long time. But we have never seen a world empire again. So Rome was the last world empire. Since Rome, we have various empires, but not one entire world empire. And then he speaks about a seventh, and this is sometimes called the revived Roman Empire. This is yet to come, and this world empire will only last for a very short time. Now, this is the interesting thing at the moment, what we experienced the last 50 years, that the world seems to come together more and more. And it seems like we go in a direction when people are wanting a one world government. Whether it has to do with terrorism, we say we all need to get together. It must be one central place from which we can fight against it and control it. So the control of this world, the political system, there is more a tendency where it goes into a one man or one place government, which would be the revived Roman Empire, a worldwide empire again since Rome. So this is one historical way to interpret the five that have fallen, the one that is in the time of John, and the one that has not yet come, but will rule for a very short time. Go with me to verse 11. The beast who once was and now is not is an eighth king. He belongs to the seven and is going to his destruction. So there is one, this is the beast, this is the political leader or the so-called Antichrist, is an eighth king. Where's my pen? It's an eighth king. And he has the say. Now, what does this mean? And please go with me now to Daniel and chapter 7. Daniel and chapter 7. We read Daniel already. Daniel is almost a must read if you study the book of Revelation, because it explains a lot. Daniel 7, and let's read verse 8, and then we go to verse 19. Daniel 7, verse 8. While I was thinking about the horns, there before me was another horn, a little one, which came up among them, and three of the first horns were uprooted before it. This horn had eyes like eyes of a man and mouth that spoke boastfully. Here's the big mouth again. Now go to verse 19. Then I wanted to know the true meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others and most terrifying, with its iron teeth and bronze claws, the beast that crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. I also wanted to know about the ten horns. Now here we have ten horns in the book of Revelation on this beast. On its head and about the other horn that came up, before which three of them fell. So there are ten horns, but then another horn came up, and 3 of the 10 fell. So when this 8th came up, 3 fell, which leaves us with 7. And so here, if only 7 are left, he is the 8th. Book of Revelation and Daniel. Described very differently and yet the same thing. So there is a king that comes up at the end time that will destroy or kill 3 of them, and he is the 8th. Let's read on in verse 20 one more time. Daniel 7 verse 20. I also wanted to know about the 10 horns on its head and about the other horn that came up before which 3 of them fell. The horn that looked more imposing than the others and that had eyes and a mouth that spoke boastfully. As I watched, this horn was waging war against the saints and defeating them until the Ancient of the Days came and pronounced judgment in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came when they possessed the kingdom. He gave me this explanation. The fourth beast is a fourth kingdom that will appear on earth. It will be different from the other kingdoms and will devour the whole earth, trampling it down and crushing it. The 10 horns are 10 kings who will come from his kingdom. After them, another king will arise, different from the earlier ones. He will subdue 3 kings. He will speak against the Most High and oppress the saints and try to change the set times and the laws. The saints will be handed over to him for a time, times, and half a time. Here we have it again, 3.5. It's always those 3.5 years where this 8th king will rule in the last kingdom on this earth. Now you may understand some of the things that you maybe read about the revived Roman Empire. And by the way, now you made me also understand why in the beginning they thought the European Union, that must be this last kingdom. Why? Because it was different nations and kings or political leaders joining. Now in the beginning there were only 5. Then another one joined, it was 6. 7, 8, then I thought, now when we are at 10, that's it. European Union, that's the last revived Roman Empire. But by now, this beast has 25 horns or something, because many more nations have joined the EU. But just so that you understand where the ideas come from, why do people think it's the EU? Well, because it's 10 kings from 10 different kingdoms which form one world empire. And we will yet to see where this will go. Also interesting, please go back with me to Revelation 17. Revelation 17. And verse 12. The 10 horns you saw are 10 kings, just what we read in Daniel, who have not yet received a kingdom, but who for 1 hour will receive authority as kings along with the beast. They have one purpose and will give their power and authority to the beast. So that's always the one Antichrist, the one world ruler that they give their allegiance to. They will make war against the Lamb, but the Lamb will overcome them because he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And with him will he be his called, chosen, and faithful followers. Then the angel said to me, verse 13, the waters you saw where the prostitute sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and languages. And this is interesting now, verse 16. the beast and the ten horns you saw will hate the prostitute. They will bring her to ruin and leave her naked. They will eat her flesh and burn her with fire. What's fascinating here, the beast will destroy this prostitute. For many, many hundreds of years, the political system and the religious system, they work together and have power over nations, languages, and tongue. But in the end, the political system wants to get rid of the religious system. It will destroy it. And what is fascinating in Europe, at least, to watch at the moment, in Europe also, church and politics went together. They had power. But more and more, increasingly, the political system wants to get rid of the church. The political system wants to rule by itself, and the church is less powerful, less important to the politicians. Just an interesting observation as you read this here. Now, I just want to also show you so the future of this religious world system. In the beginning, she works together with the kings of the earth. And in the end, she will be destroyed by the Antichrist, by the political leaders and his allies. So you have it all in the outline. And then if you compare, that's just interesting, if you compare the woman from chapter 12, which was Israel, and the woman from chapter 17. The woman in chapter 12, the offspring was a male child that will rule the world with an iron scepter. The woman in chapter 17, she will bring forth daughters who are whores. We read, she is the mother of prostitutes. And with this in mind, let's read. Go with me to Matthew 12:34. What does it mean, the mother of prostitutes? What does religion produce? Jesus says to the religious leaders in the Jewish system back then, he says to them in Matthew 12:34, very strong word. He says to the Pharisees, who were the religious leaders of that nation, you brood of vipers, how can you who are evil say anything good? What is a brood of viper? A viper is a snake, and a brood is the seed of the vipers, of the snake. The daughters of the prostitute. Religion produces religion, which is only used for power and for using or misusing people. Also, go to John 8:44. Again, very strong words. John 8:44. Jesus again speaks to the religious leaders. And he says in John 8:44, you belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. So religious systems, Jesus is very straightforward and he says, it's only destructive. Also, you may understand now, since we talk about religious systems, it is said that this whole system is identified with a city with seven hills. Now, which city has seven hills? Rome. Rome is built on seven hills. And now you understand why many believe that it's the Roman Catholic Church which is the religious prostitute, because she sits on seven hills. Now, there may be truth in that, but I believe it's far bigger than that. I believe the religious prostitute represents all empty religion. All man-made religion, whether it's Roman Catholic or Lutheran or Baptism or whatever it is, or Anglican Church, whatever is empty of God, simply a man-made system, I believe that's the religious prostitute. In Christian terms, at least. And also other religions, of course. Then if you compare these two women, the woman in chapter 12, which is Israel, is clothed with a sun. This woman is clothed with purple, scarlet, and gold. It's a symbol of empire, of ruling. She is described as ruling over sun, moon, and stars. Remember the dream of Joseph and Jacob, who is called Israel. She rules over the kings of the earth for a while. Israel in chapter 12 is seen as pure, although unfaithful, but washed and cleansed. This woman in chapter 17 is manifest as a harlot, the mother of prostitutes. Her enemy is the dragon. Chapter 12, Israel, remember? And here the dragon is her friend. Later on, she will be destroyed by him. She has a crown with 12 stars. On her forehead are titles of the oppressors of God's people. And she inherits a new city, New Jerusalem, and she becomes a habitation of demons. So just to compare these two women that are described in the book of Revelation. Similarities and yet totally opposite and different. Does this make sense? Yes, no? Chapter 17, makes sense? Religious system, political system. Let's go into chapter 18. This describes the economical system. Chapter 18. Let's just read a few verses. After this, I saw another angel coming down from heaven. He had great authority, and the earth was illuminated by his splendor. With a mighty voice, he shouted, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She has become a home for demons and a haunt for every evil spirit, a haunt for every unclean and detestable bird." So this is now called Babylon the Great. And there are similarities, but there are differences from the one in chapter 17, which we come to in a moment. Now, as we talk about Babylon, I just want to do a little historical thing to show you how the might that Babylon had. Enlarge it. Yeah, I'm good in it now. But just for you to know, Babylon was a very impressive city. This is the Ishtar Gate. And by the way, if you're ever in Berlin, in Germany, there is the Ephesus Museum. And from the Ishtar Gate, they rebuilt a gate. It's fantastic. You should have a look at it. Not the real size, but very truthfully. Now, Babylon, you know, where Nebuchadnezzar that he built, he was the king of, and he felt like God, the ruler of the whole world. And Babylon truly was great. According to Greek historians, the city of Babylon was square, 25 kilometers long on each side. So that's a square city, 25 kilometers long on each side. That's a huge city. Even today, that would be huge. The crown of By the way, German archaeologists, Robert Koldewey and Heinrich Lenzen, they confirmed all this. This wall was 30 meters thick. The Babylonian city wall, 30 meters thick. And it had 250 watchtowers all around the city. The crown of the wall was such that they had the local Grand Prix courses on the wall with the chariots. That was life in style. Babylon was seated at the river Euphrates. The Euphrates was running through Babylon, the big river. And the embankments within the city were such that they had the sailing regattas within the city. That was noble life. And then the city, this is one of the seven ancient world wonders, had the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. The Hanging Gardens of Babylon, they are trees, and they were planted within the city, and with the wood that it produced, they could build, like all the city gates, everything they needed wood for building. Now, knowing this, you can understand that Nebuchadnezzar and all, they felt quite powerful. Now, this Babylon is used in the Bible as a symbol for the system of this world without God. The power of a system where God is not needed. And so this is whenever you read Babylon, also here, yes, it does refer in a sense to the city, but it refers to a system behind it. And by the way, Saddam Hussein, he rebuilt the Ishtar Gate. I'll just show you. Where is this? Here it is. The Ishtar Gate. Oh, by the way, this is in Berlin. This is in the Ephesus Museum. I think it is with the original stones that they digged out, which is amazing. And so today, when it says that Babylon is kind of the center of this economical world system, let me also show you the map that may be modern Middle East. For those of you who are not so familiar, but this is the modern Middle East now. If this is Israel here, Jerusalem is here. Then here we have Iraq, and here we have Iran. And in the news, you know, every day is now that Iran is going to build, you know, nuclear weapons, with which the plan is to distinguish Israel. That's one of the open statements that they make. They want to destroy Israel with it. And Iraq, of course. Here, by the way, this is Babylon. Babylon is in today's Iraq. And Saddam Hussein was the one who rebuilt the Ishtar Gate because he said, I'm going to be the second Nebuchadnezzar. What did Nebuchadnezzar do? He basically destroyed Israel. He said, I'm the next one. So he felt himself to be that person. Here's the Euphrates River. Okay. And so this is the Middle East. And you know what's fascinating as well to me? Israel is such a small country. It's smaller than Austria. But there is not a single day where Israel is not in the world news. It's very interesting. Little country, nothing special. And yet the world kind of cannot get rid of Israel, even in the world news, every single day. Because God does still have a plan with it. That seems obvious. And here we have described in chapter 7 and 18, this world system who at the end of time wants to destroy Israel. Okay? Now, you know what? Let's have a break, 10 minutes, and then we go on. Otherwise, it's kind of torn up. Okay?